All right, welcome to Return on Podcast. I'm Tyler Jeffco, and I just want to say thank you for joining today's episode. Remember, this is the show where we are going to interview CEOs, founders, we're going to interview thought leaders in the e-commerce space, because we want to try to grab a little bit of what makes them successful, what makes them tick, what their experiences are, what their obsessions and habits are. Today, in this episode of ROP, I'm going to be interviewing Sameer Balwani. He's the CEO and founder of Query Marketing. That's like query, but subtract the vowels, Q-R-Y. And if you were trying to find his website, it's weareqry.com. So I found Sameer to be a refreshingly good communicator when it comes to kind of towing that line of the balance of how much do I invest in growing my brand for the future versus how much do I focus on the bottom of funnel, tacos happy, profitability happy, conversion happy advertising that we spend so much time focusing on. So I thought this was a pretty engaging discussion with Sameer. He's a good guy, seems to have a really strong head for balancing brand growth. Not every brand's going to be good for this kind of strategy, but I think you'll find this discussion interesting. And so without further ado, let's get into the interview with Sameer Balwani of Query Marketing. It's time to maximize profitability and cash flow. It's time to learn habits and hacks from the best e-com CEOs. It's time for Return on Podcast with me, Tyler Jeffcoat. All right, welcome to today's episode of Return on Podcast. I'm going to bring in my friend Sameer Balwani from Query. Hey, Sameer.
Nice to meet you, Tyler. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, buddy, it's good to have you. And it's I'm fascinated to have this discussion with you. So this is not a this is not an MMA fight. This is not a boxing match, Sameer. But I think often as the CFO on an executive team, I find myself at loggerheads with the marketing team. And I would imagine you probably do too. And yeah, so I want to take the meat of our discussion today to think through how you balance important metrics and KPIs like tacos and ROAS with really important long-term investments in the brand. Before we dive into that though, can I get a little bit of your story? How did you, what went wrong in your life where you're like, okay, let's dump the day job and actually build a company?
Oh, so much, man. So much. No, it's, I've been fascinated with small business. So my dad's an entrepreneur. So you can say it's like, it's in the blood. It's going to happen. My sister's an entrepreneur. It's like, it's just, I laugh. Thanksgiving dinner is AR and P&L conversation instead of, you know, normal things that most other families talk about. But definitely it was just going to be a matter of time. I started in digital advertising really early on, right out of college, actually in college when Facebook ads was just in its infancy. And I worked at, on the agency side, supporting brands like LVMH, and then was head of marketing at a company called Stylecaster, a really cool startup. And then most recently, before starting the agency, I was actually helping manage brand strategy at American Express. And so I've had the opportunity to see agency side, startup side, corporate side, and it's given me this unique viewpoint into, you know, how to be successful for our clients and how do we help them kind of navigate through the entire process of growth and look at things from a really unique perspective, which I think is some of the stuff that we're going to talk about today. So that's kind of what brings me to Query. And as a paid media agency for mid-market e-com brands, I get to see some really cool things. We get to do some really interesting campaigns. And really be a growth advisor for a lot of our brands as they scale and scale very quickly. As I like to say, and Tyler, you'll appreciate this, but predictably, profitably, and sustainably. Those are the three keys, right?
Well, so I love it. Let's talk about that growth advising, because I think you and I both end up sitting in the room virtually often with brand builders who are, Sameer, they're just struggling with the tension between kind of feeding the golden goose, whatever the core rev profit gen engine is for the company, while not neglecting to grow, to plow new earth, to develop new customers, to launch new initiatives. And I guess maybe just to start with a broad question, like, how do you view kind of properly managing the tension between like kind of like current month, current quarter profitability and long-term viability and growth of a brand?
Yeah. And I think it's a very philosophical question, to be very honest. This is one of those situations where it is a mix of an art and a science, and this is where your good agencies make their money. From our perspective, and we'll pose this back to our clients, it's how much of your top line revenue, how much of your profit are you willing to invest in future growth? And what level of profitability does the business need to hit to be successful? And then gauge that with how fast do you want to grow? Because speed of growth and profitability, there's a tension between the two,
Yes.
right? And so from a media perspective, it's a lever. It's just how big do we want, how far do we want to pull on the lever, how much? So I'll tell you, our fastest growing brands, paid media makes up about 40% of their top line revenue for e-com. All right.
Wow.
So 30 to 40%. And then of that 30 or 40%, their advertising, their media spend is about that. And so they're break even on 30 to 40% of their revenue. And the idea is that 30, 40% break even is now allowing them to one fuel the other 60%. And because we're talking in percentages, the actual number, the physical number is actually growing over time, right? And so that's what we need to figure out. So what we like to call it is it's a concept called a break-even return on ad spend. And there's a model behind it that we do. But at a baseline, it's take your margins and figure out how much I can spend where all of my margin goes to advertising, right? That's your break-even. I'm not losing any money on that purchase. It's
Got it.
first purchase. I may make money on the second purchase, and that's kind of where we're seeing a lot of the growth coming from. But I'm acquiring customers at break-even on a first purchase basis. Your bottom of funnel campaigns should have a higher ROAS than your break even, right? So you may look at it and say, okay, I've got a 3x, a 4x, 5x, whatever it may be. And I'm feeling really good about that. Well, all the other profit just should be reinvested in brand building and in real time. Like the beauty of being able to measure this in real time is that I don't have to wait for a QBR to say, oh man, we made an extra $1 million. Let's go do an ad campaign around brand. Like we can build
That's right.
brand as we're growing. And that's some of the stuff that gets missed out on is this nimbleness that we have. Everyone thinks nimbleness in advertising is, oh, well, we're going to do some budget changes and add. Like there is still an overarching strategic nimbleness too that comes with it that people miss out on. And I think that that's one of the key elements of it.
Hey, so quick, have you ever read Eric Ries' The Lean Startup or The Leader's Guide, any of his stuff? Are you into that
Yeah,
at all?
it's sitting right here, right next to me.
I just hearing you talk, Samir, by the way, I had not teed him up for that. I'm just curious. Not surprised at all. So like, okay, CFO boy here again. I think what's crucial and something I bought this Samir hook, line and sinker, listening in particular to the second book he recorded, The Leader's Guide, about, we do need to allocate the vast majority of our budget to the kind of current profit driving engines of our business. But that 15%, that additional 5 to 10%, needs to be allocated to growing our position within the market. And maybe that was the 15%. Then a tiny percent of our budget needs to be allocated to inventing that which should put us out of business in a few years, like that kind of thing. And so the reason this works, and this is where I want to get your input on it, is that we have to create KPIs that make it easier for founders to sink their teeth into the progress, what they're learning, right? He calls them a kind of learning KPIs or metrics. Have you stumbled on any important measurements that help you give your founder the stomach to hang around for an experiment where we're getting a 2x or 2.5x ROAS? Ugh, that's awful. Like, I mean, so what's helped you kind of educate them and keep them on board long enough to see the success?
Yeah, so luckily, measurement in paid media is trying to shift also, just as a whole. So everything from incrementality testing through to multi-touch attribution, all of these things are, signposts that we can point to and say, hey, this is actually profitable growth. The other one that gets missed out on, and there's two, is the anecdotal feedback that you can get. So for a lot of e-com stores, a missed opportunity is post-purchase surveys. So how did you hear about us? Why did you buy us? Who else did you consider when you were purchasing us? Things like that, really key. And then the last one is doing a brand health tracker. if you are large enough, assisted and unassisted brand recall is going to be really important. Especially as we look ahead to next year, we know consumer demand is waning and category demand is shrinking too. At the same time, there's more Shopify stores than ever before. So categories have more choices than ever before. And so now you as a brand have to figure out how do you stand out in a category where the demand is shrinking? And how do you, every consumer, we talk about rising CAC, it's harder to customer acquisition's rising. I mean, it's simple, right? Like we know that to be the case. So you have two options. You can either spend more on customer acquisition, or you could figure out what is the driver for your audience that convinces them to purchase from you versus anyone else and help manage your CAC that way, right?
And so what are some ways that you could do that? Because obviously of the two options, I'm immediately attracted to the one that isn't just spend more money, but I also, that's the one that's scary. I don't know how the hell to do that. Like, what is that? What tactically could that look like for some brands?
Well, I hate to break it to you, Tyler. That one's going to spend more money too, but it's just it's where you invest the money, right? So if you're going to invest the money in all your performance driving campaigns, at one point you are going to reach a plateau and you are going to say, hey, this just doesn't make sense from a margin perspective. And we're going to plateau. We're not going to ever scale beyond where we are today. Versus most brands, if you're reaching a point where you are really capping your performance, you probably have reached a point where you have a brand story. You have a brand founder story, you have a brand story, you have a brand reason to believe, all those like brand elements that make someone want to purchase your product beyond price, right? And so how do you tell that story? How do you get more people to hear that story? How do you get people to have you in their consideration set when that time is there for them to actually purchase? Another thing to consider for 2024 is the consumer journey is starting to get longer because people are being more thoughtful about the dollars they spend. And so they're spending more time thinking about the brands they want to buy. During COVID, e-com did great because everyone was impulse buying $150 products, not really thinking about it, just going, yeah, cool. Like, it's going to show up to the house. I got nothing else going on, right? Thanksgiving of 23, breaking records for travel, right? Largest travel day ever. So now consumer goods have to fight against share of wallet between services and travel again, plus other consumer goods. So it's, you got to really understand that you have to have a reason for someone to want to purchase from you, and you have to be able to follow them around for, long enough for them to make that purchase. And what may have once been considered an impulse purchase is now being considered a considered purchase.
Yeah, this is so interesting, Samir, because so at Seller Account, I would say half of our customers have, fairly legitimate direct to consumer audiences. The other half are really mostly marketplace, right? They're selling on Amazon or eBay. And I guess what one of my takeaways, I think, from what you're saying is that it's never been more important to understand kind of what you are as a brand and who your customer is. Because I could see people who really aspired. I mean, listen, they sat down a year ago at the end of 2022 and they were like, I'm gonna build a direct to consumer brand. And they start putting money into it only to maybe realize that in the current headwind environment, buddy, they're an algorithm play. They need to stay on the marketplace. They're not really suited for a direct to consumer play during this kind of closed wallet, longer sales cycle, more price sensitivity, more brand trust required. I mean, is that kind of what you're saying is for some brands just don't work, right?
Yeah, 100%. Like, you really need to have a reason to believe and a reason to exist. So, we would say, okay, here is what our brand promises. This is what we believe. This is why we exist. And here are the reasons why that is actually all true. The best brands have big communities, people that are crazy about them, and like excited to tell and talk about their products to others, right? You go on Reddit and you'll see products, you'll see brands that people are excited about, and that's kind of what you want to be able to build. Because look, as a paid media agency owner, this is probably not what I should say, but like the Holy Grail is you have a flywheel of word of mouth where your customers are the ones convincing others to purchase. It's like It's why we love holiday season. It's all about gifting. It's literally the introduction of your brand to somebody new that may full end up being a new purchaser. It's why it's so valuable to us. But you need to be able to have a brand that tells that brand story. And how do you tell that brand story? It's not through only, we get this all the time. It's, oh, well, we made a brand video and we put it on our homepage. Well, that's not the brand story. The brand story is, how do people shop with you? How do they experience your product? How are you talking about your product? What's your organic social look like? What does your paid media look like when they first engage with you? Are they getting a discount code offer as and a product ad as their very first engagement with you? There's no brand there. You're a commodity then, right? So what is the brand story you are telling to net new customers? And that's their first touch point.
That's so good, Samir. So, okay, so getting back into the ring here for a second. So we're talking about these new initiatives where we're committed to allocating some budget to launch something new. Here's the question that I feel like brand owners and maybe the CFOs in the world that are going to be skeptical might ask is, like, how do you know when to kill an initiative that isn't working?
Yeah, I'll be honest. That's probably the hardest one. And it's always going to be longer than everyone else feels comfortable. So I would say there are ways to test initiatives to get to get some confidence in things. So you can test ad campaigns and ad initiatives as long as it's not something that's going to like go viral. Like if you're doing a standard brand campaign, nothing like crazy, you can do it in certain zip codes and monitor. So you don't have to go over the top. So we create a series of zip codes that equals out the overarching United States. It's a small budget test. You run it for 3 to 6 weeks, start to see if there's any traction within those. You can do brand health trackers directly into those zip codes to see if you're moving the needle there. If all looks well there, great. Then you have the confidence to kind of roll out beyond that. And so there's options for that. The reality of the situation, you can also, sorry, and to go back, you can also do focus groups, which is like kind of the standard, like, hey, did this convince you to want to purchase more? So there are definitely ways that you can kind of manage against this. A good brand campaign will move the needle, and a great brand campaign will make your year, is what I would tell people. So no matter what, it's at least a good investment, is what I would say. Outside of having a brand snafu and saying the wrong thing or doing a really like, pissing off your community base because you just did something wrong, it's always it's almost always a net positive investment. I will say the caveat to that is you really do have to understand your audience, what motivates them to purchase, why they're excited about your products, and then you have to deliver on the product side too, right?
And I think part of that, by the way, because you mentioned earlier this, like, wow, you might be in a launch phase for for building your brand, and you may be upwards of 40% tacos. That's total advertising budget, your marketing spend for your, and I think you're doing advertising and marketing, but in my mind, they're kind of the same, they're different fuels for the same engine in terms of getting product to move. And I guess I just want to add a point to that. This is really important that your product has to have enough natural margin in it for that to be possible. Like, for instance, we have clients that actually, I was doing a case study this morning on this where one guy has like 49% cost of goods sold. So imagine this, I can sell a product for $100, cost me $49 to land that product in the States here. I am never going to have the kind of budget that Samir was talking about to successfully build a brand around that product. It's dead. I may be a marketplace play, but I'm probably not. And the flip side, the second part of the case study I did was a guy that has like 18 to 20% cost of goods sold function. Ooh, that's now we've got some sexy margins. We've got a little bit of budget to play with where if we needed to get more pedal to the metal aggressive for 4 months, 6 months, 9 months to build the brand out, we've got more margin for error in not every single campaign, because that's the issue. This is probably, I'm not saying that, by the way, I don't know your customers, Samir, but your most pissed off customers are probably the ones who didn't have enough margin to begin with to fully invest in the initiative that you were asking them to invest in. Is that probably fair?
100%. And so here's the other piece of it. And so one of the things during onboarding is we ask about margin, and we actually go through all of the product margin with the CFO because it's important for us to understand this. And here's the secret killer that people forget. You may have a 20% COGS, 80% margin, and then realize, I've been doing 50% off discounts for the last 6 months, and you realize that that 80% margin is not what you thought it was. And that's where it actually breaks down and clients end up having a, oh, wait, what's going on here? And so brand campaigns help you get off the discount train, because now you are forcing yourself out of, I'm only being bought because my price. And yep. So I would always challenge brands, especially if they have really good margin, is stop using your margin on discounts and start using your margin as an investment into the future. Because you will absolutely get better returns and better growth over time. You can always discount the products that don't move, right? Like, yep. You know, discounts hit every product. And like, that's the worst. So definitely an opportunity for brands to really consider how they use their margin. And right now, the biggest lever is always discount.
I love it. I think that's such a good, almost like reminds me of the Feds, Samir, where it's like, there's only so far you can like lower the interest rates federally to try to drive economic. At some point, you run out of lever to pull. You got nothing else to pull. Yeah. This is what Japan ran into for a while, right? So like this, this is really interesting. I think you can fake yourself into a seven or even maybe an eight figure brand if you're lazy and just discount move products, or you can invest in building a brand. So, hey, I want to ask you an open-ended question or two here, and then I want to land the plane here. I want to let you take this wherever you want to take it. If you were driving the brand strategy for, let's say, a $7 or $8 million brand going into 2024, what would you want the brand owner to start doing, and what would you want them to stop doing going into the new year?
There's a lot to start doing. I think 2024 is going to be a pretty pivotal year for a lot of our clients and a lot of brands in terms of just how they look at paid media, how they look at marketing as a whole, and their position in the marketplace. So here's, I'm going to start with the stop doing. Stop fretting over your return on ad spend. I think that is one of the big ones, because you are going to make mistakes. Give your agency guidance around what your bottom looks like. And then and then monitor actual media KPIs. Have them monitor media KPIs. Are you getting the same amount of traffic with how much budget you're spending? Are you actually growing from a top line perspective? What does your spend against your total look like? What does your revenue from media as a total look like? So all those kinds of things. You know, start looking at it more holistically, and then invest in tools to actually get a better understanding of the impact of media. So. Multi-touch attribution, incrementality testing, all of those kinds of things are really important. I think a brand health tracker for most eight-figure plus brands is key at this point. And it's not as expensive as people would think it is. And it's just something for you to be able to compare yourself against your competitive set, which means you also have to know who your competitive set is. So really start to consider who you are in the market. I'm always curious to figure out how many brands have actually sat down and done a SWOT analysis around why they exist and say, okay, here are all the other competitors. Here's where we fit in the marketplace. And this is why we are here. So I think that's a really, really important element of it.
I feel like I'm hearing you say, stop worrying, start measuring. I feel like make sure you have good data analytics. By the way, great advice on both fronts. Anything else pop in your mind when you think about, okay, here's what we got to really lean into or lean away from going into 2024?
Yeah, lean into really understanding your customer, because they're going to shift in 2024. And the reasons why people buy from you are going to shift in 2024. They're going to be much more thoughtful in 2024 than they have been leading up to now. Again, all the things that we've already spoken about. So it's a great time to start asking the questions around, why did you purchase from us? Like, what convinced you to, what was the emotional driver? What was the actual like final driver of purchase? Those are all important things to know, because that should draft your brand story and then start investing in getting that out there. Because this concept of, oh, I bought it because it's cool, is going to start to go away. And people are going to really buy it because they want something, not because, it's just kind of nice to have. So I think it'll be really important for us to be very conscious of that and then kind of find our audience and then expand it.
Yeah, I love it. One final question, and then we're going to pivot to another discussion here. But what I'm just curious, what do you think is, you talked a little bit about what you think is next in 2024, pivotal year, buyer behavior will continue. I think I'm hearing you say, will continue. I mean, buyers just have more choices. They're going to need to have more loyalty to pull the trigger. Anything else that you see kind of over that next hill that brand owners should be aware of that, I'm asking you what's next. You don't know. I don't know either. But anything else on your mind that you're looking forward to?
So I'll tell you the things that we're nervous about for next year and the things we're excited about for next year. So if you thought CAC was going to be high in 2023, you're in for a surprise in 24. It's Summer Olympics and an election year, so your paid media costs are going to be crazy. Just be prepared for that. So those are things that you are really want to be thoughtful around, especially if we're talking about category demand and consumer demand dropping. What am I excited about? AI is really exciting, which I think everybody is pretty excited about. But product discovery is also really exciting for me. And when I talk about product discovery is, Amazon Marketplace is a great place for product discovery. But Amazon Marketplace is also, the one downside to it is it's not great for product discovery when I don't have a need. So if we go back to retail stores and malls, the beauty of a mall was you walk through the mall, and even if you weren't looking for a shirt, you ended up walking by a shirt and you ended up buying a shirt. And so that element is missing. And social is starting to fill that gap. So TikTok, Instagram ads, YouTube shorts, all of those are things that have become really valuable. And that's a tool that will continue to be used through 24. And that's where we're really challenging people to rethink the use of social. Is as a product discovery, as a brand discovery tool, and helping people get find the next thing that they may want. And so I'm excited that that's going to continue on, and that that's going to be a key driver for growth for next year.
By the way, I'm prognosticating here, but CAC, for those of you like cost of acquiring customer, my guess, my CFO guess here to add to Samir's is if media related CAC is going to go up because of pressure from the Olympics that'll spend more than market rates for TV and radio ads and election campaigns that will pay way more than market rates for campaigns. My hypothesis is that even larger legacy brands will then move more of their ad dollars to social marketplace, TikTok. So think about your Amazon tacos, think about your eBay or TikTok, think about your Google ad spend and Meta ad spend. My suspicion is that there's going to be a flow down effect that'll drive CAC up for all of us, even if we're not directly dependent on like NBC or Fox to run our ads for us. Does that resonate with what you would think, Samir? Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, political ads on Facebook and Google are key also. Like one like very tactical thing for brands that they should do is look at where their purchases are coming from, especially from paid. And if it's a battleground state, just be prepared. Yeah, that's one of those things where it's like a really easy way to have an understanding of if you are going to be extremely impacted or just mildly inconvenienced, because that's something that you want to know.
That's really helpful though, because there may be some incredibly low-hanging fruit opportunities to just stop competing on keywords in a particular part of the country or a particular set of keywords that could have a disproportionate positive impact on your total performance, because you're not, fighting against either side of the political spectrum. So that's interesting. I like it. Okay. So hey, I want to wrap up and land the plane here. I really view you as being an expert in this brand space, and I think that query is an interesting model. Somebody listening to this podcast or watching us on YouTube, which why the hell have you spent 30 minutes watching this on YouTube? I'm so sorry for your loss, but somebody who needs to reach out to you, Samir, we're going to have a link to your website here in the show notes. What are they going through? What are they experiencing right now? This should be the trigger that says we need to go ahead and talk to Samir and his team.
Yeah, so if you have been pouring money into paid media and your revenue has just stayed flat, give us a call. Generally, you're plateauing. If you're currently working with an agency and you just feel like they're not testing new ideas or really coming at you with innovation, they're not being proactive. That's definitely where we excel at. So come and chat with us. A very tactical thing is we set aside 10% of all media plans with just an experimentation budget. What are we doing to try and figure out what's next? Because those are key, right? Those are the things. And then the third one is, if you feel like you don't really understand or you're not learning anything from your paid media, because your paid media should actually not just be a driver of revenue growth, it should actually be a way for you to get feedback in terms of what products are selling, what demographics are working for you, what kind of messaging in the market, what offers are working. Those are all things that we can test very quickly and give you feedback on. So that way you can go and inform it into the rest of the business. A tactical example is we have brands that will use us for offer testing online to then see what they want to do in the retail stores, they'll do demographic testing online and then do direct mail buys based on what we learn. So things like that are really valuable, and you should be getting that feedback from your agency. And if you're not, definitely have a conversation.
Guys, that's gold right there. You really want to make sure you're partnering with teammates that can help you grab that kind of clarity. Samir, I believe you're that guy. I appreciate you joining Return on Podcast today. Guys, I'm going to have Samir's stuff posted in the show notes, and anywhere you find the show, you can get it. It's weareqry.com. We are query. Again, query, we don't need those vowels. It's easier if it's just QRY. So Samir and his team, they've got great content on there. Feel free to check it out. And Samir, I just want to say thank you for your investment of time. Appreciate you coming on ROP today.
Thank you so much for having me, Tyler.
All right, guys. Thanks again for listening to the show. Until we see you next week, Samir and I both say cheers. Have a great week. Kill it. Talk to you soon.